questions there. But Bill, thank you for joining us today here on Times Radio. Bill Kristol there, leading US commentator on American politics. And that's it for today on the day when the American presidency, Mr. Trump, became a year ago today President of the United States for the second time, one of the few presidents to have a second term which was not contiguous with the first term. That's only one of the ways which has made him rather different from any other president in living memory on the United States. It was freezing that day when he got inaugurated a year ago. It's even more freezing on the east coast of the United States today. And there's a lot still to go on. We'll be back tomorrow with more news from Britain and the United States. But for now, that's it. Up next on Times Radio is Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
He'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the Times at 1. Good afternoon. It's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. We're here until 4.
And coming up on our programme today, should the under-16s be banned from social media? It could be the latest Labour U-turn. A former police chief who led child safety efforts is going to give us his view. Happy Trump-iversary. We will also be looking at the US president's latest demands for Greenland, and we'll discuss that last year with one of his first national security advisers. If you're feeling overwhelmed by all of that news and the news every day, our big guest at 3:30 deals with that very topic. It is the top psychologist, Claudia Hammond. And of course, we will talk about the rift in the House of Beckham, and we will ask, how do you dance on your mother?
Here is the news at 2 o'clock. Stuart Willey.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. European Union leaders are insisting they'll hold their ground on Greenland, despite Donald Trump saying there's no going back. France's president has been warning against what he called the new US colonialism, while the president of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, called for a new independent Europe.
The proposed additional tariffs are a mistake, especially between long-standing allies. The European Union and the United States have agreed to a trade deal. And in politics, as in business, a deal is a deal. So our response will be unflinching, united, and proportional.
Meanwhile, Foreign Office ministers say they plan to remind Donald Trump's administration of the strength of Britain's deal to hand the Chagos Islands over to Mauritius. It's after the US president called it an act of great stupidity. With a major military base on the island, he claims it shows why he needs to take over Greenland. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch disagrees with that, but isn't happy with the Chagos Treaty.
This is surrendering British territory with a strategic military base on it for no reason whatsoever. It weakens our country. It is not in the national interest. It is a good deal for China and Russia.
Controversial plans for a Chinese mega embassy in London have been approved, despite warnings from the security services. Ministers have ruled that planning permission should be granted for the site near the Tower of London. MI5 and GCHQ warn it would be unrealistic to eliminate risks linked to the new embassy, but say bringing together Beijing's 7 existing sites bring security advantages. The Technology Secretary has acknowledged that a mooted social media ban for children has risks. Liz Kendall has been telling MPs the government will hold a 3-month consultation over Australia-style restrictions. She said they'll also examine how schools enforce mobile phone bans.
I know that many parents are deeply worried about a whole range of other impacts on their children. The consequences for their mental health, their concentration and sleep, their sense of self-esteem, their ability to learn and to explore the online world without fear. We are determined to help parents, children and young people deal with these issues with a lasting solution.
The High Court has heard Prince Harry feared a campaign of attacks for standing up to the publisher of the Daily Mail. The Duke of Sussex, along with other names including Sir Elton John and Liz Hurley, accuse Associated Newspapers of unlawful information gathering. The group denies the allegations. His barrister told the court Harry suffered distress and paranoia. A man who chased a police officer with a chainsaw in Renfrewshire has been jailed for 10 years for attempted murder. PC Gary Cowan told a court he feared for his life after 32-year-old Liridin Castrati crashed into a police car in Paisley last May. His defence argued the tool was for a gardening job. And for a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online and on your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
Good afternoon, Jane Garvey, Fee Glover, Times Radio. We're here until 4 o'clock. It's always worrying when a middle-aged man wears his sunglasses in the house. And President Macron has appeared at Davos at the World Economic Forum in his shades. But there's nothing to see here. I don't think you can see much, actually. He's been wearing them for a couple of days. He's got an eye infection, he says. Of course, there are other rumours. But we report the truth here on Times Radio.
We certainly do. He's wearing mirrored sunglasses, yeah, though, which just seems to be, I don't know. It's very French.
They're a rogue choice. If you wanted people not to talk about it, you've gone for the wrong type of sunglasses.
Yeah. Can I dive in with a correction immediately, yeah, from Andy? And you're absolutely right. I thought it was how your mother dances on you, not how you dance on your mother. It's one of the strangest sentences I've ever read out on radio in 35 years. But you're right, Andy. It's how Victoria Beckham is alleged to have danced on her son at his wedding,
yeah,
not the other way around. It's the most read story today, Jane.
I'm not. Is it really? I can't say I'm even slightly surprised. It was certainly a lively topic of conversation on my WhatsApp groups and indeed in my own household.
Well,
last
I don't
night.
Think you were alone with that. It was just extraordinary to see, wasn't it?
Well, because we've all got families and we've all had rows, let's just be honest. But I have been able to reassure my daughters that should either of them ever get married, I will not behave like that at the ensuing function. So they've had my reassurance there. They look thrilled to bits. So, yes, there's no avoiding it. We will be discussing the Beckhams. What to think, who to feel sympathy for. Hadley Freeman will be our guide a little bit later this afternoon. Why Britons are finding more buried treasure than ever before. This is one of those cockle-warming stories. That's really good. You can hear that very soon. Dr. Rachel Ward will have our health news. Why is scabies becoming more common? And why is it so incredibly difficult to get rid of? That's the opposite of a cockle-warming story. If you've read about Hope Sussex in the Times, then you may well want to hear from the establishment's founders, former members of the BNP, Matt and Katie Single. This is the self-styled autonomous community where archery is taught alongside 17 different theories about how humans came to live on Earth. That's later. Just 1 year of Trump Mark II, but goodness me, it feels longer. We're going to hear today from the Donald loyalist Katie McFarland. And first up this afternoon, banning under-16s from social media. It does seem like the right thing to do, but not everyone is certain it's right or indeed workable. Sophie, what are the most read stories today?
It's kind of you to call me Sophie. after 3:30, Claudia Hammond is going to be joining us live.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to ask you about that.
In the studio.
Yeah.
She's talking about her book, Overwhelmed, Ways to Take the Pressure Off. It's a superb book because it's just straightforward. It's simple. It uses evidence. It's backed up by science. She is telling us all of the things that we actually know but we don't seem to be able to get to at the moment, which is we are not, as creatures, built to take on board the amount of misery, difficulty, sorrow, joy and sheer shopping opportunities that the internet has given us. So she's going to talk us through how to avoid being overwhelmed. Any particular questions or circumstances you'd like to put before her, I'm sure she'll be able to tackle those. We are 0333 003 2353. To give you your proper name, Jane Susan, would you like me to now do the top stories of the day?
You go for it.
In at number three, Trump criticises great stupidity of UK Chagos Islands deal. The second most read story, Elon Musk mulls Ryanair takeover in spat with Michael O'Leary. The bros are facing each other off. The two executives have been squabbling about Starlink on planes, but so far investors don't seem to be taking the suggested takeover very seriously. And that most read piece on the Times website is Brooklyn Beckham, Victoria hijacked first dance at my wedding. Sir David David and Victoria Beckham's eldest son, says his feud with his parents started while he was planning his wedding to the heiress Nicola Peltz. We will discuss that with Hadley Freeman soon. You can read all of those articles at your leisure on thetimes.com. You need your digital subscription. If you don't have one, get one. You can go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
The ban, or a ban, I should say, on under-16s using social media is set to be consulted on, we're told by ministers here. The government's expected to drop its objection to age restrictions to avoid a rebellion by some Labour MPs. Now, 66% of the public do back an Australia-style ban. This is according to new polling from the Labour-aligned Good Growth Foundation. They say the measure is particularly popular among voters who backed Labour at the last election and who are now thinking about going over to Reform. So quite an important body of voters. Simon Bailey is the former Chief Constable of Norfolk Constabulary, and he also led on child protection for the National Police Chiefs Council. Simon, on the whole, do you favour the idea of a ban?
I absolutely do, and I've been doing everything I can to lobby and secure support, because I believe that the evidence is so significant, and the decision needs to be made now as a matter of urgency before more children are harmed, more children suffer. Just by way of an example, just in a 3-month consultation period, there will be at least 300 plus more children that will have been subject of sextortion, and that's only the cases that we know about. I don't know why there is this period that we need to consult. There needs to be a period of reflection, because the evidence from my perspective is so significant, it's so strong, that we should be acting now and we should be supporting Lord Nash's amendment in the Lords.
OK, I mean, it's really interesting that you mention sextortion. Perhaps we don't talk enough about that. It is truly horrible, isn't it? Just explain exactly what goes on there.
In very simple terms, there are offenders that will buy an artificial intelligence tool that will turn somebody like me into an attractive 24-year-old woman. That woman will then encourage a man or a boy, and there are too many boys that are being caught like this, into performing a sex act for them. It's then recorded, and they are then subject of blackmail and extortion. And we've seen in some of the most extreme cases, young men end their lives.
Yes, I mean, it's absolutely horrific, an unbearable tragedy for the families impacted by it, of course. Why is it then that some notable individuals do not share your enthusiasm for this ban? I think a lot of people listening to Times Radio now may very well have come across the piece by Ian Russell, who suffered tragedy himself, the death of his daughter Molly. He doesn't believe that the ban is actually going to work. Indeed, he thinks it might be harmful. What do you say to him?
So, I mean, my response to Ian's concerns, and look, and I have huge respect for Ian, and obviously he has gone through the most appalling tragedy and circumstances in his life. But what I would be suggesting to Ian is the fact that the Online Safety Act, it's now been in existence for some time, but Ofcom are yet to bare their teeth. And when they do bare their teeth and they do start to hold these companies to account, I believe that they will be then involved in incredibly lengthy litigation. There will be appeals in courts, in Supreme Courts, in high courts, and any effective interventions by Ofcom are going to be significantly delayed. And what I fear is through any lengthy period of consultation and then the bringing together and the reporting and the creation of recommendations as a result of this particular proposal, it's going to be kicked even further into the long grass. We know the tech companies are not listening effectively. We know the tech companies are not doing enough. And I don't think Ian could argue with any of those statements. And let's just look at the recommendations from the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse. How many years ago were those recommendations made? How many of those recommendations have been implemented by not only this government, but the previous government? There's an urgent need now to protect children.
Okay, right. No, I think everybody listening will agree there. But what are you saying about not just this British government, but predecessor governments? Are they scared of big tech?
So ICSA wasn't so much around big tech. They are dealing with the complex challenges around safeguarding and around child protection. And of course, I think money comes into this. This should not be about money. It doesn't need to be about money. We have a body of evidence from doctors, from clinicians, from police officers, former colleagues like myself that are making the case that actually the evidence exists now to protect children now. We don't need a period of consultation. We don't need to be looking at how effective the Online Safety Act is and how effective Ofcom is in this debate. Just listen to doctors, listen to teachers, listen to frontline practitioners that are dealing with the daily reports of online child sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And understand that actually I don't think this is such a big decision. The Australians have already made it. And I think now is the time to be bold and to support Lord Nash's amendment in the Lords.
OK, you say be bold. Ian Russell, the father of Molly, might describe it as somewhat misguided. He says in his Times article that in Australia, just 1 in 8 underage Instagram accounts have been removed, and some very vulnerable adolescents are genuinely heartbroken at the loss of quite important connections with their peer groups because they can no longer talk to them on social media. What do you say to that?
So, I think we have to be really careful here. We cannot allow perfection to be the enemy of good. The fact that Instagram accounts are still in existence is the responsibility of the tech companies, and I think it speaks volumes about what they are doing. And the fact is that we all know that they are not doing enough. And just because you are removing some forms of social media, it doesn't mean that children are still not going to be able to communicate with each other, still be able to talk, and still to have friendship groups. I think we need to understand what this amendment is focusing on achieving. And you only have to look at the number of reports that are submitted to the National Centre for Missing and Exploited Children every year by Meta as a platform. It is millions and millions. Let's look at the latest information that talks about, in 2024, 63,000 generative child sexual abuse images being in circulation. In 2025, it's now in excess of 1.3 million. Those statistics should send a cold shiver down the spine of everybody listening to this interview. And the fact that children are being exposed to these harms, children are opening up images and then they are being presented with the genitalia of a man or a woman that's not been sought. It's harming their well-being. And actually, the amendment being put forward by Lord Nash doesn't mean that those children that Ian has referred to would not be able to communicate, would not be able to share stories, but they would be able to do it in an environment where they are not in such great risk as they currently are when you look at the abuse that's taking place.
OK. When is that amendment going to be voted on?
This afternoon.
Right.
At 4 o'clock.
At 4 o'clock. Well, that will be very interesting.
Tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Right. Forgive me. Got you. We'll keep an eye on it. I have to say, if I were a cynic, I were of your point of view on all this, and I'm not saying I'm not, by the way, I'd be quite heartened by the fact that 3/4 of people who voted Labour back in 2024 are now planning to go to Reform. They back the ban. Surely Labour cabinet members will be aware of that, and this is likely to happen, isn't it? It's going to go ahead.
Well, I can only encourage the Lords to back Lord Nash's amendment, and I hope if it's successful it then goes back to the Commons, and I hope the Commons and the MPs listen to the professionals that are dealing with the challenges that they are presented with on a daily basis. And listen to the voters. and listen to the concerns that so many people in this country have, and let's make a decision that's right for children. I hate the fact that children being at risk, children being abused, has become so politicised in recent times. The politics needs to be taken out of this. We need to do the right thing. We need to protect our children. And this ban that's been proposed by Lord Nash would be a really significant step forward.
Thank you for taking part this afternoon. That's Simon Bailey. He used to lead on child protection for the National Police Chiefs Council, and he's the former Chief Constable of Norfolk Constabulary. Thank you for your thoughts on this. We'll get to reading a few of those messages in a moment. It's 0333 003 2353.
I thought it was really good, Jane, to hear someone be specific about what we are referring to when we talk about images on social media, because quite often people think, I'm on the radio, I can't say these things, but you really do need to know what it is that kids are seeing, and I thought our previous guest handled that very well. It is 19 minutes past two. Here comes a gear change. It's been a bumpy year for metal detectors. We'll dust that one off in a moment. Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. You can explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk, or why not visit your local Wix store.
The Times Radio Assisted Dying Debate with Jo Coburn.
Assisted dying looked all set to be brought into law, but if the bill doesn't get through the Lords by the spring, it's over. On both sides, feelings are strong, and we brought together two eloquent and forensic thinkers to debate it. Columnist and philosopher Kathleen Stock has written a book called Do Not Go Gentle: The Case Against Assisted Death. The neurosurgeon Henry Marsh disagrees. The Times Radio Assisted Dying Debate with me, Jo Coburn.
This Thursday night from 9 on Times Radio and live on the Times YouTube channel.
Life is short. The world is big. See more of it with Wild Frontiers. Experience the soul of Georgia through traditional winemaking. Find your Zen on ancient pilgrimage routes in Japan. Or enjoy a 1,000-star experience in a yurt camp on the Silk Road. Wild Frontiers' expertly crafted journeys take you further, so you can wander often, wonder always, and worry never. For small group tours and tailor-made adventures, visit wildfrontierstravel.com.
3, 2, 1, it's live! Go, 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 go!
We're bursting to tell you something big. Your entertainment destination has landed, and it's bursting with all your favourites.
You're impressed by that? A little.
Yeah, me too.
Say hello to TLC. Full to the brim with The Big Bang Theory, Young Sheldon, and brand new Georgie and Mandy's First Marriage.
What if I'm dreaming?
And just to make it even sweeter, it's completely free.
Bazinga.
TLC. Bursting with great telly. Wherever you watch free TV.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
The Story. The award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Let Wix install your new kitchen. Choose from a wide range of kitchens and add the option of installation to your order. For complete peace of mind, all installations include a 2-year workmanship guarantee. Get started by booking a free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Metal detecting in a moment. First, some of your thoughts on social media and the potential ban for the under-16s. MJ says the ban will help many, and undoubtedly some children will find darker areas of the internet, but that's no excuse for not protecting the bigger group. Ban it for everyone under 16 and then start campaigning for tighter laws to save others. Jenny says, I think what really gets my goat about calling for the ban is, number one, it's 15 years too late. I know of people now in their 20s who've had to navigate all this alone. Two, the cat's already out the bag. Three, define social media. Would you call WhatsApp, Discord, Snapchat, and in particular YouTube social media? As a parent of two teenagers and an aunt to many, many more, and a PhD student studying this subject, I think this is a blunt tool designed by adults who've only just realised it's an issue. And Rachel says, never mind banning under-16s from social media. I think the sad story about the Beckhams illustrates a need to ban parents. In my experience, teens hate having their pictures and boastful posts about their successes published online. I feel it creates huge pressure on them to perform and conform. It's interesting, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly a very odd extra pressure to have on your childhood, isn't it? I think most of us, when we were kids, we found it excruciating when your mum or dad just said, you know, say cheese for the camera at a family gathering, and you knew it was only the people in that shot who were ever going to see it. But the idea now that it goes out to millions certainly does add a pressure. I think it's a really good point. Do you know the list of social media that was banned in Australia, and are we following exactly the same path?
I don't know the answer to that question. Should we find out?
Yeah, so things like WhatsApp, I think, are interesting because I'm not sure that I would call that social media. But, I mean, it's a carrier of images, and you can build a huge group. So perhaps I'm wrong in that. If you're not sure what you're going to get up to once you retire or how you're going to afford it, you're not alone. Pension Power Up is our new four-part newsletter series. It can help you take charge of your pension. Every week from the end of January, you'll get clear, practical advice to help you build up a stronger pension, whatever your situation. All you have to do is go to thetimes.com/pensionpowerup today to sign up and take the first step towards a more secure future.
Will you search through the lonely earth for me? Climb through the briar and brambles.
Well, this is the theme from the much-loved TV series The Detectorists. Many of you seem to have taken it to heart. The Portable Antiquities Scheme records archaeological discoveries by the public and has announced a third record-breaking year. Silver pennies from the reign of King Harold, the potential remnants of a decorated drinking horn. They're amongst almost 80,000 items found in 2024. More than 1,500 treasure cases were amongst those. Let's talk to Levi Price, who is part of the MDP Detecting Days in South Wales. Levi, a very good afternoon from us. Hello?
Good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely, our pleasure. Tell us a little bit more about the kind of things that are being discovered by metal detectorists.
Well, metal detectorists are bringing up all kinds of different finds from the Neolithic, Iron Age onwards. There's Roman, we have Victorian finds, and there's a huge contribution there to the historical mapping of the UK overall.
So 80,000 items found in 2024. I mean, am I being a bit cheeky in saying those are just the ones that have been reported? What's the deal with what gets reported and what doesn't?
Well, the increase of finds which have been reported is incredibly good to see, because it does go to show that detectorists are following due process and recording their finds through the brilliant staff of the Portable Antiquities Scheme.
What are the actual rules about what you're meant to record and what you might just be able to keep?
Well, that does vary on depending on whether the item is classed of national interest as well. So there are contributing factors, but the finds liaison officers would be more than happy to walk us through that process should we find anything of a significant value.
Do you think that an awful lot of people are finding things? And maybe, you know, let's not attribute criminality here at all, but maybe just not realising what they've found, so they aren't reporting it.
There are genuine concerns, but it's very important of us to raise awareness and educate people on the responsibilities of correct metal detecting when it comes to reporting finds. And the increase in participation of this makes it even more important. Mm.
What kind of things have you found over your detecting career?
I have been lucky enough to find some medieval hammered coins. And I've also managed to find a medieval hawking bell, which still had the metal P inside, so it would still ring to this day.
Now, a hawking bell. So you mean a bird of prey, calling a bird of prey back?
That's correct.
Wow.
Could you dong it now?
I don't have it on display currently. It is in the other room. But yes, I could.
Yeah. Talk us through the feeling, Levi, when the detector equipment tells you that there is something in the ground, and then when you find something as extraordinary as that.
Well, there is an element of experience to the hobby as well, to know which may be a good signal and which may not be. Some signals share a specific tone, which may particularly excite you more than, say, lead. However, there's a lot of experience to it as well. But it's always an incredible moment when you do have a significant find.
When you first saw the Hawking Bell, did you know how old it was? Could you immediately tell?
I did not, but I found it in an area along with a medieval hammered coin that day, which both went into the staff of Cardiff Museum. And they've now been recorded and gone through the Portable Antiquities Scheme to create a historical map of that area.
How many more people are now becoming metal detectors? Does anybody have the answer to that question?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why there's an increase in detectorists these days. There's an increase in social media presence. There's an increase in clubs. There's an increase in organised digs as well, some of which go ahead for charity. And there's also a genuine interest from people in it, which is what we accommodate through the MDP detecting days with all equipment provided.
And how much has the hobby changed over the years? I mean, can you buy kind of state-of-the-art digital detecting equipment now that has simply changed the way that you search?
Well, the technology has come a long way, but I wouldn't say it's changed the way you search. We're still out there with our detector on our shovels. However, the Portable Antiquities Scheme, which started in 1997, has really helped us report finds and map our history.
Well, it's lovely to talk to you, Levi. It is our piece of news today that we hope is simply going to entertain and interest people and cheer them up in what can be quite a doom-laden world. So we appreciate your time. That's Levi Price, who is part of MDP Detecting Days in South Wales. Now, we couldn't get to hear the medieval Hawking Bell because it was in a different part of Levi's house. But Ryan has provided us with a sound effect of a Hawking Bell, and here it is. Well, I don't know, by comparison to the imagined voice of the French Henry IV yesterday, how are our sound effects doing today, Jane?
I don't know, that's got an almost Christmassy feel to it, dare I say.
Oh, look, a peregrine falcon's just come into view.
By the way, the Australian social media ban takes in TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat and Threads, but not WhatsApp or Roblox. Quite a few people are interested in, particularly in Roblox, which I think a lot of kids spend a great deal of time on that platform, don't they? And they still can in Australia at the moment.
So yeah. That's why an awful lot of kids are also trying to join LinkedIn, which would surprise LinkedIn.
Yes, wasn't quite what they had in mind, I don't think. Jennifer says banning seldom achieves the required result. Perhaps parents should take some responsibility for the care of their children and not leave it to the state. I've just watched a young mother give her toddler a phone to play with and not talk a word to her throughout lunch. Is it surprising that youngsters are unable to communicate and live in a virtual world? Yeah, I think we've all seen that sort of thing. It's a bit grim, isn't it, Jenny? I have to agree. 0333 003 2353. Back in the day, I just parked my kids in front of the telly. That's what I did, Fee. And look at them now. Well, they're telly addicts, unfortunately. Anyway, wild allegations, inappropriate dancing and some unguarded Instagram posts. Yes, it's the Beckhams. They're next, whether you like it or not, on Times Radio. Don't pretend you're not interested. Here are the headlines. Stuart Willey.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. The top Republican in the US Congress says he wants to calm tensions with the UK over Donald Trump's threats to take over Greenland. It's after the American president called Britain's Chagos Islands deal with Mauritius an act of great stupidity. Mike Johnson was speaking at Parliament, marking the 250th anniversary of US independence.
We've always been able to work through our differences calmly as friends. And we will continue to do that. I spoke to President Trump at length yesterday, and I told him that I really felt that my mission here was to encourage our friends and help to calm the waters, so to speak, and I hope to do so.
Meanwhile, new Reform MP Andrew Rossendale says Trump's shift on Chagos is down to pressure from Nigel Farage. He claims his party leader has been lobbying the White House behind the scenes. China's controversial plans for a new super embassy in London have been approved, despite concerns by some MPs and campaigners about the risk from spies. MI5 says there are security advantages from bringing together Beijing's seven existing sites. The technology secretary has admitted a possible social media ban for children has risks. Liz Kendall has confirmed to MPs the government will hold a consultation on Australia-style restrictions. And the comedian and actor Russell Brand has been granted bail after being charged with two new sexual offences, including rape. He's already pleaded not guilty to five original charges. For a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times Radio News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
This is Times Radio.
Ever wondered if travelling solo could be the perfect way to meet other like-minded travellers? Or dreamed of exploring new countries in small groups led by the best local guides? Ever wondered what it feels like to sail on a ship dedicated exclusively to solo travellers? Or to travel the world knowing every detail has been expertly taken care of? Spend less and experience more with 10% off all Riviera Travel solo holidays in 2026. It's a wonder why you'd choose anyone else. Book today with Riviera Travel. ABTA and ATOL protected.
Unfold a world of on-the-go entertainment with the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 7. The massive 8-inch main screen means you'll see the bigger picture as every exciting moment unfolds. Share every highlight and keep the whole family entertained wherever you go. Buy yours now and claim £300 cashback. Conveniently available to spend in your Samsung wallet. Purchase before January 29th from a participating retailer. Claim on the Samsung website within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on. Keep playing. Keep winning. Keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly. Over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
Get the day's politics, business and sport every weekday in breakfast from 6:30 a.m.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. Ready to start planning your new kitchen or bathroom? If you'd like a personalised design, the Wix free design service can guide you through the whole process, including a free home measure. Book today at wix.co.uk.
John Pienaar, you may be able to detect it's already in full flow. He was just telling me, just quietly, just between us, that today is, quotes, madder than yesterday. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's a perfectly reasonable, reasonable understatement. I mean, so let me just go through one or two of the things that have made the agenda today what it is and why it is competing with yesterday for, I don't know, craziness, for want of a better word. So you see this morning how President Trump tweets earlier on, calling Keir Starmer and Britain weak and stupid. This is after the Prime Minister makes all these efforts to get close to President Trump to flatter him and the importance of the British-American relationship. He gets that massive slap in the face. So much for emollients. But, you know, what do you do now if you want to avoid a trade war and the collapse of the Western alliance? Well, that is the question. And I'm going to be putting together on the show, well, maybe the perfect brain trust of all brain trusts. I've got Nigel Sheinwell live on the show. He's a former UK ambassador to America as well as to the European Union. And Applebaum, who's an enormously respected historian and commentator. I've got the former Deputy Secretary of State under Joe Biden, Wendy Sherman, Jeremy Hunt, the former British Foreign Secretary, and Ambassador John Bolton, the former National Security Advisor to Donald Trump, and others, including Kurt Volker, who's another former US ambassador. He was ambassador to NATO. And so what can anyone do to head off this enormous, explosive-laden train that's careering down the track towards us and looks on course to destroy the Western alliance, to maybe trigger a global economic crisis and many, many other dangers in between? Well, it's really difficult when you're dealing with Donald Trump, and we've certainly seen that. But we're looking at Donald Trump now, who, among other things, is said to be contemplating the idea of yet carrying on and taking over Greenland and calling it, renaming it, Trumpland. the Board of Peace has now been, the plan's been published, and the plan, which was originally discussed as a way of bringing stability and overseeing Gaza, it is now involving 60 national leaders. It involves President Trump as the chairman for life and able to nominate his successor when he eventually leaves that office, if he ever does. It involves membership of the group, involving handing over $1 billion in cash into a pot which will be controlled by Donald Trump. And I could go on. So if I say this is a challenge which bears some reflection and discussion, it's a bit of an understatement, isn't it?
Well, you've got a stellar lineup of guests tonight, John. Well worth lending your ears to John's programme between 4 o'clock and 7 here on Times Radio.
We are going to consider the Trumpiversary that is being celebrated or commiserated today. We'll do that just after 3 o'clock. First, though, they say all families have problems, but it would seem that the Beckhams have really taken it to the next level. Last night, Brooklyn Beckham, who is the oldest of David and Victoria's children, came out with 12 explosive claims against his parents, from controlling his life through social media to completely ruining his wedding. Hadley Freeman is a columnist and feature writer at the Sunday Times. Hadley, you're always welcome on this programme. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you two?
Yes, we're very well indeed. How far up your head did your eyebrows go when you read Brooklyn Beckham's Instagram post?
Yeah, I mean, it's heartbreaking. That's the first thing to say about it. And also, there is a feeling of inevitability about it, not just because there's clearly been a break coming between Brooklyn and his parents for a while, but I really feel like the Beckhams were kind of the vanguard of families, full stop, but you know, certainly celebrity families, who used their children as part of their brand. You know, from the moment Brooklyn was born, his parents were holding him in OK Magazine and Hello Magazine. Certainly since social media, which Victoria and David have very much embraced, the children have been used as part of that. And I have found it, you know, I have thought about this a lot, you know, as someone who's a not celebrity, but with children, is how does it affect the children when parents are using them to up their follower numbers, which at its base is kind of what it's about. And that was the part of Brooklyn's post that really kind of struck home, I think, that his parents use the kids as part of their brand.
I'm so glad you've said all of that, Hadley, because actually I too feel really, really sorry for him. I think it is easy to be cynical about him and say he doesn't really know what he's doing. He's got a gifted and privileged life. He has undoubtedly got money in the bank. He has found the love of his life. You know, this feeling that somehow he has deserved the difficulties he's had. It's not really fair. He's had no choice in his childhood, has he?
Mm, no. And I really do feel, as a sort of long-term obsessive celebrity watcher, that the kids of celebrities who do best are the ones who are kept off the red carpet, the ones who aren't put in the spotlight, the ones whose faces we wouldn't recognize on the street. And I can reel off straight off the bat, you know, all of the Beckham kids' names, probably their ages too. And Brooklyn has especially been mocked for his occasional attempts at various careers, whether it was photography or cooking. And it's sort of a no-win situation for him at this point. I mean, yes, he could go off and lead an anonymous life. On the other hand, he has been raised in a family which believes celebrity is everything. And if your parents are there thinking that the most important thing in the world is fame, then the kids are going to grow up thinking that. So as much as Brooklyn wants to break out of that bubble, and you can see he's sort of trying to do it, he is still very much perpetuating it. You know, he is posting this on social media. He's posting all the time about his wife. So it's this sort of finger trap that he's in, that he can't break out of it because he's so immersed in that world anyway.
Yeah. I think the detail that's going to stay with everybody is this first dance at his wedding. So just the language around it is just really odd, Hadley. He said, it was an excruciating moment in my life. I was called up on stage. He thought he was going to do the first dance with his wife. In fact, his mum was on stage, and he says that she danced on him. Now, can you just unpack that a little bit for us?
You know, I have two sons myself, and just the thought of one of my children ever posting that I danced inappropriately with them at their wedding or on them is so horrifying. And of course, lots of people people are already going through all the coverage of the wedding at the time. I think Vogue did an official report and pointing out that there are discrepancies between what was written at the time about the wedding and what Brooklyn says now. But I think the point that he's kind of trying to make is that, you know, no matter what he does, his parents have the spotlight. And the problem for him really is that the only reason he's famous is because of his parents. And if he still wants to be famous, which judging from his social media and his various forays into celebrity type careers, he does, then he's always going to be at battle with his parents.
Yeah. David Beckham is in Davos for the World Economic Forum. Just leave a pause there. He's not addressed Brooklyn's comments, but he has spoken to CNBC about children and social media. Here he is.
I've always spoke about, you know, social media and the power of social media, you know, for the good and for the bad. You know, the bad we've talked about with what kids can access these days, and
it can be
dangerous. But what I've found personally, you know, especially with my kids as well, use it for the right reasons. Yeah. You know, I've been able to use my platform and my following, you know, for UNICEF. Yeah. And it's been the biggest tool to make people aware of what's going on around the world for children. And I've tried to do the same. I've tried to do the same with my children to educate them. They make mistakes. Children are allowed to make mistakes. That's how they learn. Yeah. So that's what I try to teach my kids. But, you know, you have to sometimes let them make those mistakes as well.
Gosh, now how do you interpret that? I mean, clearly the question was being asked specifically about what's happened in the last 24 hours. He's kind of dodged it, but he has told us something, hasn't he?
Well, a little bit. I was looking at David and Victoria's Instagram over Christmas because that's the kind of cool middle-aged woman I am. And it was amazing how much they were posting, and they were posting very kind of intimate family moments. I thought there is, you know, videos of Victoria and David dancing in front of a fire, videos of the kids dancing with their grandparents. And I just kind of thought, why am I seeing this? Why is this being shown to the world? And David and Victoria, you know, both have had these Netflix documentaries, quote-unquote, done about them, which are basically just advertorials. And I think it is very confusing for kids if their parents are presenting a very picture-perfect image of their lives, this idea that nothing is off-limits, and yet they see something different off-screen. Yeah. And that is very, very confusing.
In the documentary about Victoria Beckham, there is an excruciating moment, actually, where she is awarded the Entrepreneur of the Year Award. And I can't remember the magazine that was sponsoring it. And it's her daughter, her teenage daughter, who goes up on stage and gives the speech about her and gives her the award. And I just thought, gosh, that is crossing a line. Actually, it's very difficult anyway to ask your children to applaud you. I think the wrong way around, isn't it? You know, let alone give you an award. It's all topsy-turvy, Hadley. It's all topsy-turvy. Yeah.
No, it's terrible. And, you know, to be fair to the Beckhams, they're not the only celebrities who use their kids so much on their social media. Yeah, I've been watching the Baldwins, Alec and his wife Eladia, for a while, and all those children are constantly being featured and held up as, you know, sort of proof that the parents are perfect. And it is very weird. And obviously, I am in no way comparable to the Beckhams. But even just this Sunday, I was out with my kids and someone came up to me in a cafe and said that they'd read my column that morning in the paper because they recognized my photo. And I could just see my kids being really quite weirded out by this, like that a stranger felt that they knew their mother and their mother was now spending time talking with this stranger. And I mean, it's this very tiny microcosm of what a celebrity's child has to go through. But I think that idea that your parent has an image that's out there in the world and strangers know about them and your parent wants strangers to know about them and cares about that is a very confusing moral message for kids.
What do you think will happen now to Brooklyn and people's opinion of him in this country? There is a trope here as well, isn't there, of a lovely, very innocent English man marrying a dastardly American wife. We've got Meghan and Harry, we've had Gwyneth and Chris, we've had Edward and Mrs. Simpson. Your accent, Hadley, leads me to believe that you can answer this question boldly.
It's true. All of us American women are plotting to take your English sons away from their parents.
You nasty women.
It is amazing how similar the Brooklyn story is with Prince Harry. I mean, Prince Harry has the same thing, which is that he made a whole big deal about how he wanted to break away from the royal family. And it turned out what he wanted to be was a celebrity. So again, it's someone who feels that their validation comes from being known in the eyes of others. You know, it's similar to what Brooklyn's going through, I think. But in terms of what happens next, the fact is, as Brooklyn's going to find out, people are a lot more interested in David and Victoria than they are in Brooklyn. And I think ultimately the casual public is going to stay on David and Victoria's side. And the fact is they have come through much worse than this in the past. The brand Beckham, I suspect, will just roll on.
Lovely to talk to you, Hadley. Thank you very much indeed for your time this afternoon. That is Hadley Freeman, columnist, feature writer, and American woman. I think actually British-American woman from the Sunday Times. It's always lovely to hear from her. Are you going to stay team David and Victoria, Jane, or is a little bit of you going to go team Brooklyn?
I'm saddened by it, genuinely, because... But then again, I haven't monetized my happy family because... My family is about as happy as most families, which is some of the time and not all of the time. I don't really understand why people do it. And it's such a risk. And you are putting an almighty burden on the children who had no choice in the first place.
Wouldn't it be absolutely lovely if Brooklyn turned his hand to a solid career in something? And as his father has said at Davos, only used social media for the greater good. So nothing about his family, nothing promoting anything from either him or his wife, just something really decent to tell the world about.
Isn't it true that Bruce Springsteen's son is a firefighter? I think that's right. And that, for some reason, that's a proper, solid occupation, a world away from his brilliant dad, who I absolutely love, but... He is a firefighter. It's been confirmed. He is a firefighter. If only more celebrity kiddies took that route. And they can't all join the emergency services, I get it. But that seems to me like a better way of doing things.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Just get a proper job.
Time
for you.
He's been a firefighter since 2020. Right, OK. Well, well done. Well done to that young... it is a young man. Well done to him. We did have a WhatsApp from one man who said he wasn't remotely interested in David Beckham and he'd walk out of the room if David Beckham came in. But that's just one example of we've had one Times Radio listener prepared to out themselves as someone who just isn't interested.
It's the most read story.
Well, of course it is, because most people are interested, even those who say they're not. Coming up, we're going to check in with our doctor, Rachel Ward. She's our resident GP and she's here every single Tuesday at around 10 to 3. And today is no exception. It's Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix, the experts in kitchens and bathrooms.
The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay on Times Radio, hosting an honest conversation about current affairs, well-being, lifestyle, health and wealth. Plus, don't miss Tomorrow's Home, highlighting how you can make your house more energy efficient. The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay, tonight from 7 on Times Radio, with the UK government's boiler upgrade scheme. You could upgrade your heating with a £7,500 heat pump grant. Visit gov.uk/cleanenergy to check eligibility.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
We travel to explore, to learn, to connect. At Viking, we believe travel should be more than just a trip. It should be a doorway to cultural insight and personal enrichment. Our itineraries are designed to help you explore and engage with your destination through its food, culture, and customs. Start planning your river, ocean, or expedition journey today. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
In areas overwhelmed by conflicts and natural disasters, we can't miss a life-saving moment. As a doctor with Médecins Sans Frontières, I've seen how a moment lost can mean a life lost. Right now, MSF is working across the globe, providing maternity care, containing outbreaks, performing vital surgeries. We can't miss a life-saving moment. MSF needs help. Your help. Every attack, disease, and natural disaster puts more people at risk and calls for our teams to go further and faster. Medical emergencies move quickly. So must we. £50 will keep our work going and make a life or death difference. The life-saving moment is now. To give £50, call 0800 055 7979. That's 0800 055 7979. Or search MSF Urgent. Thank you.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Dr. Rachel Ward is a GP, co-host of the Pharmaseat podcast, and she joins us every Tuesday to talk about health news. Now, prostate cancer is officially now the most common cancer in the UK. Diagnoses are increasing or have increased by 42% in the last 10 years. Now, Rachel, is this because it's becoming more common? If so, why? Or are we just getting better at diagnosing it? What's happening?
Good afternoon, both of you. So, yeah, this is a complex situation with cancer diagnosis. So, for example, we know that during COVID, we had a huge fall in the number of people that we were diagnosing of prostate cancer. So, of course, there will be a catch-up element as well. However, when we look over a longer period, so looking over a decade, we know that the overall number of people, men being diagnosed with prostate cancer, is increasing. And that is thought to be due to a combination of an aging population, but also the positive impact of the increased awareness, you know, through various campaigns and public awareness from, you know, celebrities, people like Sir Chris Hoy, who has obviously really raised this into our awareness.
Now, some very unfortunate men do die of prostate cancer, don't they? We know that. But a lot of other men die with it. Is that why we've decided as a country not to have a screening programme?
Yeah, so unfortunately, about 12,000 people per year in the UK die of prostate cancer. That is obviously very significant. Older men, it tends to be honest, will die with prostate cancer. Many people will not even know that they have got a kind of slow-growing prostate cancer that isn't giving them too much problem. But that's not the reason that we're not screening. The main problem that we have is that we just do not have an appropriate test which fulfills all of the criteria of a screening test that is felt to be, you know, to be the right fit for that programme. The National Screening Committee released a new review of this in December, and they said that at the moment they feel that if we did an overall blanket screening programme, it would cause more harm than good. Now, there are people that disagree with that and feel that we should be really looking at high-risk individuals and be more proactive, because at the moment there is absolutely no proactivity to getting men to have PSA blood tests done. It is simply if they come to their GP and ask for them, we can discuss it with them.
Right.
But, you know, we are not encouraged to be getting men in to have that test.
And black men are much more likely to get it?
Correct. So black men, people with family histories as well. These are the people that we need to be really encouraging. There's a really useful tool on Prostate Cancer UK website. It's their opening page, and it takes a couple of minutes, and you put in some of your details about your age, ethnicity, family history, and it tells you if you are at high risk. And I would really encourage men to take a couple of minutes to do that.
Right. OK. And are there some men who are put off because they fear that the testing will be invasive?
Yes, I think so. So I think people still, you know, men still avoid coming to talk to GPs about it because they automatically think that we're going to, you know, insist, for example, that they have a rectal exam. And, you know, there are cases where that's indicated, but absolutely not all the time. So please don't put that up, let that put you off. Come in, have the discussion, and we can work around what is best for you and talk you through the various pathways of investigation.
OK, now I read, I have to say, quite a horrifying article. It was in The Guardian about scabies. It's so important because, first of all, it sounds awful and it's getting more and more common. Now what exactly is it?
So scabies is a microscopic mite, and it's an infection. The mites go under our skin, they burrow under the skin, and they lay eggs. And they cause an incredibly itchy rash, particularly at night. People find that at night they are overwhelmed with this itching. I think people still consider scabies as a disease to do with being dirty, to, you know, having dirty houses. That's absolutely not the case. And we have definitely seen an increase in the number of people coming in with scabies. You know, that's now been documented by the Health Security Agency. And there's been a huge increase. And I certainly can vouch for the fact that I'm seeing more and more people coming in with scabies.
Right. OK, just a quick description. What does it look like?
So it tends to be a bumpy red rash. You can see burrows under the skin, particularly in your web spaces, in your between your fingers. But, you know, not everyone will notice that. And it's the itch which is really telltale. And what you will notice is that people in your household start to get the same itch. So it's passing around your household. Sometimes quite difficult to diagnose because the rash can be quite mild, but it's that itch that is really marked.
And how do you get rid of it?
So it's quite a strict regime of covering your whole body with a particular cream called permethrin. And you have to cover literally your entire body with it and keep it on for 12 hours. You have to repeat that process a week later, as do all of your contacts. And you also have to put all of your bedding and towels in hot washes. So it's really quite difficult to get rid of. And I think this is why many people, you know, often find it difficult and it goes on and we have to do repeated courses of treatment. It becomes very tricky, but it can be cured with this.
OK, so if you do think you've got it, do seek help. But I have to say,
absolutely,
I hadn't realised it was so horrible and an expensive business too, if you're doing loads and loads of washing.
Absolutely. And yeah, there was an interesting piece in that article that, you know, people say you get this surge often in universities after Freshers Week. And the students are struggling to do all of the washing to keep up. So it keeps perpetuating.
Right. A lovely thought. Thank you very much. It's not funny, really, because it must be so horrible. Dr. Rachel Ward, thank you very much. Resident GP here on the afternoon programme and co-host of the Pharmacy Podcast. I definitely want to avoid scabies if I possibly can.
I think you're wise to do that.
Thank
the poor
you.
Students, God, they got enough on their plate, let alone that. The idea that they'll be able to stick to that very, very high bar of hygiene and also spend 12 hours with top-to-toe unguent on them. Oh, dear. Well, sorry about that, everybody.
Unguent. You don't hear that word often enough, but
welcome. Welcome back to it.
Lovely.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
All of that takes us to 3 o'clock. You're listening to Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio. Coming up, Donald Trump's former national security adviser tells us what she makes of his last year. The Times has been investigating a centre led by a conspiracy theorist that's teaching children as young as 4 how to shoot. We've spoken to the man at the centre of the story. And our big guest is the psychologist Claudia Hammond on her latest book, which is called Overwhelmed. Let's get the very latest news headlines at 3. Here's Stuart Willey.
Fee, thank you. Good afternoon. A former Secretary General of NATO has told Times Radio if the US takes Greenland by force, it will be the end of the military alliance. Donald Trump has repeated his threats, warning that Denmark cannot defend Greenland and the US has to take the territory. Anders Fogh Rasmussen is also a former Prime Minister of Denmark, which has sovereignty over Greenland.
If that threat comes to fruition, it would be the end of NATO. It doesn't make sense to have a collective defense organization where the major ally attacks another ally with the aim to take territory. Still, I doubt that it will come to that, partly because there is not support for that in the US Congress.
Meanwhile, the UK will press ahead with plans to hand the Chagos Islands to Mauritius, despite Donald Trump calling it an act of great stupidity. The US president says that decision is one of many national security reasons why he wants to take control of Greenland. Plans for a huge new Chinese embassy in London have been approved by ministers despite concerns. MI5 and GCHQ warn it would be unrealistic to eliminate all risks linked to the new embassy, but say bringing together Beijing's 7 existing sites bring security advantages. Dan Jarvis is the security minister.
China has and will continue to pose threats to our national security. But following detailed consideration of all possible risks around this new embassy by expert officials across government, I am assured that the UK's national security is protected.
Another Conservative politician has been sacked over suspicions he was planning to defect to Reform UK. Welsh Parliament member James Evans has had the whip removed and lost his role in the shadow cabinet. The technology secretary has acknowledged that a mooted social media ban for under 16-year-olds has risks. Liz Kendall has been telling MPs the government will hold a three-month consultation over Australia-style restrictions, and they'll examine how schools enforce mobile phone bans. Simon Bailey, the former Norfolk chief constable, told Times Radio a lengthy consultation isn't needed.
The decision needs to be made now as a matter of urgency before more children are harmed, more children suffer. Well, just in a three-month consultation period, there will be at least 300 plus more children that will have been subject of sextortion.
Brooklyn Peltz Beckham has broken his silence about his fractured relationship with his family, saying he doesn't want to reconcile with them. In a social media post, the 26-year-old said he's standing up for himself. Speaking with CNBC in Davos, Sir David Beckham talked about his children and using social media.
I've been able to use my platform and my following for UNICEF, and it's been the biggest tool to make people aware of what's going on around the world for children. And I've tried to do the same. I've tried to do the same with my children to educate them. They make mistakes. Children are allowed to make mistakes. That's how they learn.
For a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the Times Radio app, online and on your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes Kitchens and Bathrooms.
It's 3 minutes past three, so it is an anniversary day today, and it might feel strange to reflect on the first year of Trump's second term as US president, when it seems that almost every day we are dominated by a flurry of news from across the Atlantic. But let's press pause for a moment and look back over those last 12 months. Today, it's his criticism of the UK's plans to hand over the Chagos Islands to Mauritius, which he has described as an act of great stupidity, arguing that the deal is one of the reasons for the US to take over Greenland. Well, speaking this afternoon, France's President Emmanuel Macron warned that the world faces a return to rule by the strong.
As will a shift towards a world without rules, where international law is trampled underfoot, and where the only law that seems to matter is that of the strongest, and imperial ambitions are resurfacing. France and Europe must defend an effective multilateralism because it serves our interests and those of all who refuse to submit to the rule of force.
Well, we're going to talk now to Katie McFarland, former Deputy National Security Advisor under Donald Trump. A very good afternoon from us, Katie. How are you today?
I'm great. I'm on Long Island and it's snowing. It's fabulous.
Okay. Are you hanging out the bunting on the first Trumpiversary of the second term?
Yeah, I think it's been a really significant year for the United States and really for the world. And what President Trump has set out to do, he wanted to do it in the first term, but it's now possible to do it, is to really reset the United States' relationship with most of the world. Part of it will be tariffs and trade agreements. Part of it is national security, and part of it is U.S. domestic national security.
Katie, we've got a very strange buzz on the line, and I'm sorry to interrupt the flow after only one answer, but I wonder whether we could do a little bit of fiddling around with the technology just so we can really hear what it is that you're saying. I don't want to waste any time in trying to call you back, but maybe there's a button that we'll be able to press. It might just be severe weather conditions in Long Island, in which case we might have to dial you up on a completely different system.
Well, what we know is that Donald Trump is going to be in Davos tomorrow. And that's, let's just be honest, that's going to be interesting. On the subject of Davos, our producer today, Felix, has alerted me to something the Financial Times has written about. They say there's a new language, Davosian, phrases that you might well hear at this year's World Economic Forum. Would you like to hear some of them?
Yes, please.
Do so. I'm glad you said that. It's great to be here. What that really means is I just spent 2 hours on a minibus and I slipped over on the pavement. Here's another one. Is this your first Davos? What that really means is, are you too unimportant for me to talk to? And so we move on. But that's Davosian.
That is brilliant. And we will definitely have more Davosian. And thank you very much indeed, colleague, for making sure that the time was filled while we called Katie McFarland back. Katie, hello.
Hi.
Oh, no, it's still there.
Oh dear, I'm so sorry.
Let's battle through.
Okay. Do you know what? We really want to hear from you. We're going to battle through. We may not talk for as long as we first anticipated. I wanted to ask you, though, whether or not over the last 12 months you have seen what you expected to see in Donald Trump's second term.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of the same things that he introduced in his first term, but he's in a better position to carry them out in the second term. And that is to renegotiate and rewrite the trade agreements between the United States and the EU, the UK, China, et cetera, to make it more reciprocal trade than it has been in the past 3 years. And secondly, to reset America's national security issues. So not only to seal the southern border so we no longer have millions of illegal immigrants coming into the United States, but also to focus on the Western Hemisphere, which the United States has not done for decades.
Sure.
To understand the importance of the Western Hemisphere and to not only as trade partners, as investment partners, but as security partners.
I want to come to his foreign policies in just a couple of moments. But on that point about immigration, it is borne out by evidence from polling that his latest very fierce policy using ICE is actually costing him popularity. So although his latest poll rating went up a bit to 40%, it was down in the 30s in December, polling on immigration takes him down another 11%. This is an unpopular, and many people believe, a really over-aggressive policy. Do you think he has gone a bit too far?
No, I think, as President Trump has always said, polls go up, polls go down. Don't take them at any one point in time. Overall, his immigration policy is extremely popular, sealing the southern border. So I think that, you know, a lot of this is who is ICE targeting? And it's targeting, as far as I can understand it, ICE is looking at the worst of the worst. So the people that they're going after are the drug dealers, the narco traffickers, the sex traffickers, the gangbangers. And those are the people they're picking up and trying to send back to their countries of origin.
Okay. But Renee Nicole Good wasn't any of those things, and she lost her life to an ICE agent.
I think that's true, and I think that the course of justice should will out. I think there's evidence on both sides, and I think that, again, that's not something that you and I can look at a video and make a conclusion on. I think that let the wheels of justice take their turn.
Sure. We are going to call you back, Katie, just on a normal telephone line, because I think somewhere between Long Island and where we are on the banks of the River Thames in London, we've got a gremlin in the system, and we do want to give our listeners the opportunity to hear everything that you're saying. I'm going to ask Jane Susan Garvey to provide us with more Davos speak, please.
Can we just insert BA into that, please?
BA?
Yes, Bachelor of Arts.
BA? Oh, I'm so sorry.
How could you forget?
I thought you were cabin crew, were you?
God, don't ask me. Chicken or beef? Right, here's some more Davosian. President Trump set out an innovative vision for America's relations with fast-growing economies. What that really means, the president gave a rambling speech in which he appeared to confuse Cameroon and Cambodia. Or how about this, more Davosian? Humanity has just entered a new era of possibility. What that really means, it's January. And we'll just do one more. Davos is just the perfect place to get some distance from the day-to-day. What that really means, I've just announced mass layoffs and I needed to escape the office. There we are. That's what's really being said at the World Economic Forum in Davos. Sir David Beckham is there today. He's probably gone to escape some of the family turmoil. And President Trump will be there tomorrow, and there'll be full coverage here on Times Radio.
Absolutely beautifully done. And I'm very much hoping that if I reintroduce Katie McFarland, former Deputy National Security Advisor under Donald Trump, in quite a slow way, we might be able to... Yes, here we go. I tell you what, they're going to play this out in a media class,
aren't
they? That's
how you do it, kids.
Katie, are you back with us?
Yes, I am.
Third time lucky. Okay, that is definitely much clearer. I'm sorry we don't have an awful lot of time left, but I really want to get your thoughts about the last 12 months in terms of foreign policy. Because Donald Trump did quite clearly say, when asking to be re-elected by the American people, that he wasn't interested in getting involved in foreign wars. He wanted to put America first. But as we know on this side of the Atlantic, we have reported, certainly over the last month, on a daily basis, something that would completely and utterly refute that. Why?
I would disagree with your press. We are not getting involved in foreign wars. The United States, whether it was bombing and destroying the Iranian nuclear facilities, whether it was seizing Maduro of Venezuela, who has killed Americans to bring him, he and his wife, to the United States for crimes. We have not, we are not invading countries. And, you know, President Trump has been really clear
but
for
Katie,
20,
isn't,
30 years. Going back to Vietnam,
okay,
don't put boots
but,
on the ground.
But
don't
isn't,
get in a war.
Isn't that actually semantics apart from anything else? Because most people took Donald Trump to mean that he wanted to put America first. It was one of the great slogans of his campaign. So whether or not it's a war or boots on the ground, it is heavy American involvement outside of America.
Well, I think putting America first doesn't mean putting America's head under the sand. It doesn't mean that the United States retreats from the world. It's just the United States promotes the United States interests first in the world. So if you take a country like Venezuela, which is a narco-trafficking state, what he has done is taken two narco-traffickers and brought them to the United States, tried them for crimes, they'll face justice. What about the rest of Venezuela? We didn't put boots on the ground. We're having a U.S. Venezuelan economic relationship. We're going to develop their oil. Now, that puts U.S. interests first. It also helps Venezuela, but it puts American interests first.
What would happen, do you believe, if over Greenland, Europe really does take massive issue with Trump wanting to take control? And the murmurings are there. They are getting louder by the day.
Mm-hmm. With regard to Greenland, I guess I've been kind of mystified why the Europeans are so against the United States having that relationship with Greenland. You know, one of the there are several reasons. One is trade, the maritime trade route that's going to come through the Arctic, which is very important for your for all of Northern Europe and for the United States. It's also the national security reason. You know, there's the Golden Dome. Everybody can laugh about the Golden Dome, but I worked for President Reagan when he tried to do that initially in the 80s. With a Star Wars missile defense system that would protect the United States from intercontinental ballistic missiles coming from the Soviet Union to the U.S. Now, the threat has changed. It is now Russia and China and North Korea with potentially intercontinental ballistic missiles aimed not only at the United States, but at Canada and at Europe. Why would Europeans not be happy with the idea that they would be inside the Golden Dome and that all of Europe would be protected against nuclear attack?
Well, because it's undemocratic to take over another territory.
The process is ongoing. I think that the fact that they've all met, you know, the Vice President Vance, Secretary Rubio has met with the Greenland and Danish equivalents. They are now going to have a working group that's going to discuss what might the relationship be. The United States already has military bases in Greenland. The United States used those bases in Greenland during World War II to really protect Europe so the American supplies and convoys could go from the United States to Europe to keep Europe alive I don't get the idea unless it's some kind of major posturing. The United States is probably going to put in billions and billions of dollars of investment into Greenland. Why would anybody object to that?
Yeah,
if it is
but
I think that
is what's mystifying an awful lot of European leaders. If Greenland has been playing ball with America in Greenland anyway, why would you need to then turn it into Trump land? I tell you what, though, Katie, we've got so many other things that we would love to talk to you about, and I'm so sorry about the technical issues at the beginning. How well do you think President Trump is? Do you find some of the things that he says from time to time just a little bit odd?
How well? You mean how is his health?
Yes.
His health is fantastic. He sleeps 3 hours a day. He's in his late 70s. He has more energy than any of the people working for him who are half of his age. So I'm not at all concerned about his health. What about some of the things he says? Well, this is Donald Trump. You know, he's a New Yorker. He's a New York real estate developer. He sometimes can, I suppose, to European ears can sound brash and too in your face. Well, you know, Americans have gotten used to it, and a lot of Americans kind of like it.
Mm. What do you think is going to be his biggest and most pressing issue with the American people over the rest of his second term? Do you believe that the Epstein files are going to cause him more consternation?
No, there's nothing there. With regard to President Trump, I think the biggest thing that President Trump is going to face in the year ahead before the American election by-elections that we have in November is the economy. He's done a number of things which have set us up for great economic growth, unlike the European countries, et cetera. So, for example, $20 trillion coming into the United States to build new factories to invest, the new tax system, the new regulatory system where we've slashed a lot of duplicative and unnecessary regulations. So there are a number of things where we're set up to succeed, but will it happen fast enough? And the example would be 1982 when President Reagan faced the American people in his by-election. He put in all these things, and everybody had felt the pain, but nobody has seen the gain yet. The gain happened a year later after the by-elections, and with President Trump, the concern is we know the gain is coming. We know that we're going to have economic growth, 4, 5, 6, some people have even said 7% economic growth. But will it kick in soon enough?
He will undoubtedly leave office a far, far richer man than when he entered office. I think sometimes on this side of the pond, we find that a little bit difficult to understand. Do you think that America simply congratulates him for doing that and for making his family rich too?
When Donald Trump came into office, he was one of the richest men in the world. If anything, his time in government has lost him a lot of money. And we have very strict regulations about what you can do and what you cannot do. And so as far as the idea that you're implying that President Trump is doing this because he's going to get to be really rich, he was already really rich. I mean, I've been on the Trump airplanes. Air Force One isn't as nice as the Trump airplanes. I've been in the White House for 50 years of my life. The White House residence isn't as nice as Mar-a-Lago and Son of President Trump's residences. So the idea that he's doing this to get rich, there may be other politicians who do it, who seek public office to get rich, but Donald Trump is not one of them.
Okay, I wish we had more time, particularly on that issue, but we appreciate your patience and thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Katie McFarland is the former Deputy National Security Advisor to Donald Trump.
Right, one or two of our American-based listeners struggling with their blood pressure, they say, after that interview. I've got to say, I'm not sure the next interview is going to help all that much because it's about a community founded in 2021 in rural England by a group of anti-vaxxers and former members of the far right. So that's the next interview coming up. You are listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wickes. The kitchen and bathroom sale is now on. You can explore all the sale offers at wickes.co.uk or why not just visit your local Wickes store.
Incredible snorkeling.
Carnival!
Sunrises and sunsets.
Grilled lobster.
Poppy cats and kayaking.
Morning swim.
Pina coladas.
Serene spas.
If you love the sound of a Caribbean holiday, then Sandals have every little thing covered. Do it all or do nothing at all. Your perfect holiday is waiting at sandals.co.uk. Sale now on. Atoll protected.
With over 50 years experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
It might be mid-winter, but there's nothing mid about this offer. The new Samsung Galaxy S25 Ultra brings every winter sport moment to life, as crisp as freshly laid snow. With its stunning 6.9-inch dynamic AMOLED display, razor-sharp resolution. But here's the real win. Claim £250 cashback. Conveniently available to spend in your Samsung wallet. Purchase before January 29th from a participating retailer. Claim on the Samsung website within 30 days of purchase. T's and C's apply.
Listen at 6:30 every weekday morning for your indispensable briefing on the latest politics, business and sports news of the day.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wickes. Right now, the kitchen and bathroom sale is on. There are options to suit every budget and every home. Browse details all the kitchen and bathroom sale offers at wix.co.uk.
Is everyone okay? Mike says, my word, this lady is on a different planet. Amanda says that are very strict regulations in the USA. It's a pity Trump doesn't adhere to them. Paul says, you're cheeky. I enjoyed the interview, especially as a lot of your questions went completely over that American lady's head.
Lady
isn't the word that Paul uses there. And so we go on in a similar vein. Matt says Trump doesn't sound brash. He sounds narcissistic and dangerously insane, and not just to Europeans. Well, look, I mean, everybody is welcome to come on the airways and tell us their opinions about things. I think just that final question, though, about Trump and his attitude to money, I would just struggle with that, because Trump tells us continuously about how much he loves making money, that is a motivation for him. I don't think we should be expected to deny that.
If you just need to calm down, it's really worth emphasising. Our guest after 3:30 is Claudia Hammond. Now, she's a psychologist. She's written a book called Overwhelmed: Ways to Take the Pressure Off. OK, so that is coming your way at about 3:35 this afternoon. Next, though, we're going to talk about this community. It's a self-styled community. It's called Hope Sussex, founded in 2021 by a group of people who are very strongly anti-vaccine and included former members of the far right. Now, it describes itself as a centre for positive energy. It offers lessons in which children as young as four have been photographed holding some sort of weapons. Now, Ofsted says it was prevented from inspecting the site in 2022. And under current legislation, Ofsted doesn't actually have the power to investigate this establishment, as it doesn't actually describe itself as a school. Well, I've been talking to its founders, conspiracy theorist Matthew Single and his wife Sadie, who is a former state primary school teacher, and I asked them to explain to me why it isn't a school.
Basically, we're not a school because each of our tutors are independent. They are not working for Hope. They work for themselves, and they therefore have that contract with the parents to teach their children on whatever subject is their subject, and that's how we work.
Okay, well, how many people are coming and going then on a daily basis?
Well, I would say today, how many people do you think we've got here today?
Today we'd have about 40 people.
About 40, yeah, I'd say that's about right, yeah.
And this is 40 people, including children who are having lessons?
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
Yeah, and parents as well, and tutors all together.
OK, so how many of the individuals are children being educated in this setting?
Well, it varies, you see. Home education is very fluid. Today, we've got about 20 children.
Yeah, sounds like about that. 20, yeah. 25, obviously some come in for the morning and then go in the afternoon, etc.
We have about 6 tutors on site and the rest are parents.
Yeah.
And what are the children doing today?
Oh, there's all sorts of lessons running today. We've had tap dancing, drama, critical thinking. I've been teaching primary age maths and English this morning. There's been some woodworking skills taking place.
The ancient Greeks.
And I was a little group this morning doing some history work as well. So there's a real variety. And that's what's the beautiful thing about having a home education hub, is that parents and children can choose what it is that their children are interested in, follow those passions, and choose those classes that work for them.
And Matt, you said you were teaching biology, so is that what your degree is in?
No, but basically, I do biology as an add-on. If you teach science, you can't help but go into biology. They're the two subjects are so linked, it's almost impossible to separate them in some cases. So I get into the science, and then we started going into dissection, and that's been very popular. And parents really want that. They want to get into the subject and find out how things are working. They don't tend to teach dissection in schools anymore, which is a real shame because it's the best way to learn.
Do you have a degree, Matt?
No, I do not have a degree in science, no.
Right, and do you have a teaching qualification?
I have no formal teaching qualification.
Right.
Well, so, point out that neither do you have to work in a private school.
No, I didn't. I'm just interested. I didn't say that. I know that you don't have to have those qualifications for private school. What are you dissecting?
Oh, well, basically, my dissection class, we've done everything from lungs, liver, hearts, testicles, kidneys, So I do 1 hour on how it works, why it works, what it does, how it's linked to the rest of the body, how to keep it healthy. And then the next week, we then do the dissection.
Where are you getting the organs from?
Oh, well, there are various companies that supply those graded organs that usually supply to schools, and we just buy them privately.
They're called samples for schools.
Okay, and a lot of people are going to be interested in critical thinking that you mentioned. Who teaches critical thinking?
Well, critical thinking kind of runs through the very vein of Hope Sussex. So it's a natural position to come from a point of critical thinking. And all of our tutors, indeed a lot of the parents, a lot of the kids, will always question, because we always say question everything, you know, just because it's been given to you as a narrative, it doesn't necessarily mean that that is all there is to know about it. Always ask questions.
Well,
always get into
all there is. I mean, I need some examples. Give me an example of something that you'd be teaching in critical thinking this week.
Well, I'll tell you, one particular issue that's been really used by the media is regards to that we teach children that on the 7th of December 1941 at Pearl Harbor, the Americans knew that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor. Well, we've not said that that is a definite, but it's worthwhile considering. Is that a possibility? If you're interested in history, maybe a bit of investigation.
Right. Well, that's a relatively well-worn conspiracy theory, isn't it? That it's been around a while.
Well, it's still there, yeah. It's still there, and it's still being spoken about and still being investigated to this day. It's one of those really interesting things if you're into it.
Some people say it's interesting. Some people just say it's codswallop, Matt.
Well, if you think it's codswallop, then that's fine. That's your opinion. That's fine. You think it's codswallop, there's lots of things that I hear, okay, and I know it's kind of codswallop. However, I'm not going to dismiss it because it's someone's opinion and it's therefore worthwhile considering.
Well, I want to speak, actually, and I'm interested in the line you're going with this. But actually, I want to point out that in mainstream education, things that are taught as fact, and that is it, and there is only one theory. For instance, and I've mentioned this before, and in previous interviews, about how life began on Earth.
Right.
It's taught as only one theory in schools. It's in the national curriculum.
Right. We haven't got all that much time, so you're saying the theory of evolution is what's taught?
No, we are taught loads of... We teach the children here loads of...
This is at Hope we teach different...
Yeah, at Hope we do.
I need to know, what are you saying? I mean, this is interesting.
Well, we teach the theory of evolution. We teach on the theory of creationism. We will teach about the possibility that we were visited by alien life and that alien life has given birth, all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff. It's worth investigating because, let's be honest, we don't know with 100% certainty. And so that's how we teach critical thinking.
We teach children all of the different theories. So we presented them. We're not doing this every long. We did this in a lesson. So 17 different theories of how life began on Earth, and children were reading about it, were presenting ideas to other children, ended up in a debate, and they were being shown all the different theories. Of course, we said one of the mainstream views and believed by a lot of mainstream scientists is the theory of evolution. Okay, we absolutely showed them that, but we also presented them with lots of other theories as well for them to make their own minds up.
Well, so just very quickly, what is interesting is the mainstream will ridicule anything other than the theory of evolution. So if you come along and say, well, hang about, it might not be evolution, automatically you're in that position where you're trying to defend yourself, and that should never be the case.
Well, critical thinking is so important, okay, and children in schools are just not taught it enough.
Let me just deal with some of the things that have been said about you. Are there images of primary school age children from your community holding air rifles and firing at targets?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
And what's all that about?
I teach archery and I teach air rifle shooting and pistol shooting, yes.
Because?
Because it is something that's fundamental to us. It teaches discipline, it teaches accountability, it teaches respect. And if it weren't for archery, we'd all be speaking French right now. So I think it's pretty important.
And not all the children do it, just a few children who choose to, who are interested in it. It's not something we make children do.
Can we just whiz back to the, if it wasn't for archery, we'd all be speaking French? What was that?
Well, if it weren't for archery, we'd all be speaking French.
What do you mean?
Have you not studied any history? You are aware of the Hundred Years' War, Agincourt, Crecy, etc., etc.
I've got an A-level in history, but I must have missed it. Tell me more.
Archery is something that is within the very vein of Englishness. It's something that you can't separate Englishness and take archery away from it. for many years, that was the only sport that the English people were actually allowed to take part in. It is so important, and it's a wonderful thing to learn. It teaches physics, it teaches science, it teaches discipline, it teaches focus, accountability, respect for one another, safety. It's a great sport.
Yeah, so if we'd been better at it, we'd have beaten off William the Conqueror, would we?
Well, that was, we were using, you know, we were using battle axes, and they had the art, they had the, they were just better at it than we were at the time. Right. So if you want to go into the history of that particular battle, I'd love to, but I find it absolutely fascinating.
We're around the corner from Battle of London.
You're
part of the world, isn't it? Is it true that you were both members of the British National Party?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, I joined in 2001 and I was kicked out in 2008.
We both were. I was an elected councillor as well.
Yeah, and I also worked with security, and I was also a candidate in many elections, and you were as well, weren't you? Yeah.
And there's no sense of embarrassment about your former membership of a party that I think it's fair to say a lot of people find pretty repugnant.
Well, you say repugnant, but if you were to take what the British National Party stood for and brought it 20 years to where we are now, it would be safe to say that we would have a considerable amount of support.
Is it true, Matt, that you are an admirer of both President Putin and the North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un?
Kim Jong-un. I've never met either of those gentlemen.
Well, I wouldn't think I'm sure you haven't met them, but you are supposed to be an admirer, true or not?
Admirer, no. I think admiration would be a bit of an excess. I would say that I respect any man or woman that stands up for their nation and the nation that they are there to represent, and not globalism.
Strong leaders, I would respect.
Certainly Vladimir Putin as a strong leader.
Yeah, well, he's a despot. He's a tyrant.
No, he's not a despot, and he's not a tyrant.
Oh, isn't he? Okay, so I know I can leave the building here at the Times and I could stride around Borough Market close to my office and I could say I think Keir Starmer's rubbish, and I'd be absolutely free to do so. I suspect I would not be free to walk the streets of Moscow saying the same thing about Vladimir Putin.
When was the last time you did that? Walk the streets of Moscow saying Vladimir Putin's rubbish. How many times have you done that?
Well, have you done it? I don't admire him. You say you admire him.
You raised that. So how many times have you been to Moscow and done that?
Do you know, I haven't been to Moscow, but have you been to Moscow?
Oh, you haven't been to Moscow. Now, I said I hadn't been to Moscow. I haven't been there.
Right. But
I said I admire any leader that represents his people, which he does.
Right.
That's why.
Okay, so based on our conversation about what's happening in your community, why can Ofsted not come and have a look at what you're doing? They have tried, haven't they?
They tried once to come onto site, and we met them at the gate. We explained that we are not a school and they were to leave our premises immediately, which they did after a short conversation, and they've not come back.
There's more about Hope Sussex at thetimes.com if you're interested. Both Ofsted and East Sussex Council were approached for comment. It was Matthew and Sadie Single that you heard from there.
Never have we needed Claudia Hammond more, and she will appear as our main guest after the latest news from Stuart Willie.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Pete, thank you. Good afternoon. The Governor of California has criticised Europe's response to Donald Trump's threats over Greenland as the UK faces pressure over the Chagos Islands deal. Speaking in Davos, Gavin Newsom accused leaders of being complicit and lacking backbone. He said leaders need to push back harder.
I can't take this complicity. People rolling over. I should have brought a bunch of knee pads for all the world leaders. I mean, handing out crowns and this is pathetic. Nobel Prizes that are being given away. I mean, it's just pathetic.
Prosecutors say no further charges will be brought against the killer nurse Lucy Letby. Police had been pushing for her to face trial over allegations of murder and attempted murder relating to 9 children at hospitals in Chester and Liverpool. They've expressed frustration at the decision. China's been given permission to build a so-called super embassy in the heart of London, despite criticism from MPs and campaigners. They're concerned the site, the former Royal Mint headquarters, could be used as a base for spying. The comedian and actor Russell Brand has been granted bail after being charged with 2 new sexual offences, including rape. He's already pleaded not guilty to 5 original charges. And Sir David Beckham has not addressed the family feud with his son Brooklyn, but says children make mistakes on social media and that's how they learn. His oldest son has spoken out for the first time, saying he doesn't want to reconcile with family. Don't forget, you can set the Times Radio News Briefing as your news service on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
I thought that I'd seen beauty. Then I sailed where icebergs gleam. I thought I'd witnessed nature, but this surpassed my dream. I thought that I'd known wonder, then sailed beneath these skies. I thought I'd seen the world until I opened my eyes. Change the way you see the world with HX Expeditions. Search Travel HX to discover more.
Water. It doesn't get nearly enough credit. You drink it, you grow your dinner with it, you wash your bits with it. You surf on it like some kind of levitating wizard. Yes, water is the greatest. Without it, Earth would be just another dry, crusty cosmic fail, like Mars. Think about it. Everything you know and love starts with water. Your dog, your car, your internet, which is basically just a load of sweaty computers kept cool in a bath. And then there is just a small miracle of keeping us alive. Without drinking water, you wouldn't survive more than 3 days. Some mates take longer to text you back. So, let's raise a glass to clean water. It's hard to imagine life without it. Seriously, how is it that 1 million people die every year because they lack access to clean water? That's not just unthinkable, that's wrong. Donate to WaterAid today. Just £2 a month can give life-changing clean water.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio with Wix. The kitchen sale is now on. Start 2026 with a brand new kitchen. Kitchens start from under £3,000. Explore all the sale offers at wix.co.uk or visit the showroom in your local Wix store.
We will make time for some of your thoughts about guests just before the news, but we need to get to our big guest first. We are overwhelmed with a sense of overwhelm, so how can we make it stop? This is the huge question asked by top psychologist Claudia Hammond in her latest book, which is called Overwhelmed. And if you're thinking, oh no, how can it help to put another thing on my list, read a book about being overwhelmed? Well, don't worry, because in it she details how best to cope with everything that modern life is throwing at us. Claudia, how lovely to see you. After our last couple of guests, we do really need you as well. So thank you very much indeed. Your timing is perfect. Are we as humans simply never going to be able to cope with this modern world, or are we just in the phase of struggling to adapt?
I think that's really interesting. I mean, humans are absolutely brilliant at adapting, and they do adapt to changing times, and again, people do. But I do think it takes a while, and I think there is a sense that a lot of people have at the moment that there is just ever such a lot going on, whether it's in the world or in their own lives, and that there is a lot to deal with. And we can learn to do that.
Because you have studied so much about this subject, do you look at other people and think, if you could just get to the place that I'm at, you'd be fine? I mean, is there an element of Claudia Hammond's got it sorted personally?
I mean, I wish I had it all sorted, and I wish I always followed my own advice and always followed the research. Obviously, I don't always do that. But there are some things that I have really changed about my own life, or the way I think about life, having looked at all the research on this. And one of those is about to-do lists. You know, a lot of us, I did get very oppressed by my to-do list and the amount to do, and feeling it's never going to be gone. And actually, we have to accept it's never going to be gone. And it is, in a way, just a tool. It's a record of what we're doing. It is true that if you get to the end of it one day, then there will be some more things on that day the next day. And so I think we need to not feel oppressed by it. We need to see it as something that's useful for us and something that's a tool to help us to cognitively offload, if you like, to remember what it is we've got to do so that it's not hanging around in our head as another thing to stress us out.
I love your advice in the book, and one piece of advice that I really welcome was the fact that sometimes just don't bother getting back to people. If they really really want you to do something, then they'll get to you somehow. Don't stress it. Just like let it fall off the edge of the table. I like that very much.
I think that sometimes we can be over conscientious, and you know, I've got a whole chapter on perfectionism, and we know that one thing that is on the rise, particularly among younger people, is perfectionism. And so that can come down to even things like replying to emails and thinking, oh, I must get back to someone straight away. And it's very tempting to reply straight away because then it's kind of gone and we want it out of our heads. But actually, we don't need to. And if you do reply to all your emails straight away, you do then set up an expectation of those people that, you know, this is a good person to ask because she'll get back to me straight away. So you kind of might encourage some more work to be put on yourself if you do that. Obviously, if things are really important, you need to sort them out. But it's like that advice of when you come back from being on holiday, say, to don't start at the earliest emails, start near the end, because some of those things will have got resolved now because other people will have sorted them out in your absence.
Brilliant. Why should we channel our inner Oblomov?
Because one of the things that he did was not to worry about anything. So he was the part of a character in a huge Russian novel. And he just didn't really do very much and didn't really worry about what he should do and what he shouldn't. And sometimes we need to rest a little more. Sometimes we need to let go of other people's pressures. A lot of the stuff is to do with other people's pressures and people putting their standards on us, or is even thinking that other people expect certain things of us, and maybe they actually don't. If you ask, a lot of people think, say, even as adults, that their parents are expecting them to do certain things. But actually, when you look at the research, what most parents want is for their children to be happy. You know, sometimes they might put loads of pressure on them, but often what we want for our friends or our family is for them to be happy and possibly relax a bit.
Obviously, there's quite a big parenting story around today about the Beckhams and Brooklyn Beckham's response to what he's described as a very controlled and controlling environment that he's experienced as a child. And it taps into all of our experiences with social media, this, the fact that we can see into so many other people's world and we know that they're trying to manipulate our response to them, but we're still playing the game. And that's quite an odd parasocial activity, isn't it?
It is. And I think one of the things that does happen these days, you know, I don't put everything down to, say, social media, but one of the things we can do these days is to compare ourselves with far more people than we used to be able to. So, you know, teenagers used to be able to compare themselves, say, when I was a teenager, you could compare yourself with the rest of your class. Now you can compare yourself with millions of people who will have curated their feeds, who will have, you know, doctored their photographs and are only showing you the best bits, and that can make, you know, the rest of us feel worse about these things. And I think for any family that is in the public eye this much, then, you know, it must be so hard when even your arguments are in the public eye.
Do you think that we understand the addiction of social media and the kind of professional use of our personal lives enough?
I mean, that's a good question. I think, again, that is something that people are just adapting to, and that people are working out, if they're using it, say, professionally, where does the professional life start and where does the personal life start? You know, where do those end and how do they separate? And of course, there are loads of, you know, influencers now whose whole job has got to be coming up with enough stuff and mining their own lives for enough stuff. And some, you know, influencers are now stopping doing it because they say that the pressure of that is just too much, because they actually need to live their lives as well as being thinking about, oh, you know, how can I film this? How can I put it up there? What shall I do with it?
Your book is so packed full of evidence and scientific research, which is very helpful when you're reading through it. And I know that an awful lot of people have noticed the example that I've noticed too, which is the Boston Marathon and people's experience of that. Can you just talk us through what that evidence is?
Yeah, so in the Boston Marathon, there was a bombing in 2013, and a psychologist who's in California called Roxanne Cohen-Silver decided to study this, and she looked at how much media people were consuming in the days following it, and she came up with the most extraordinary finding, which was that the people who consumed 6 hours or more of watching media about the marathon, which might have been online even then, and you know, or on rolling news, those people who consumed 6 hours or more a day of it experienced more acute distress than the people who were actually there and witnessed it, which seems absolutely extraordinary. But it is explained by the fact that if you're there, it's terrible and awful, obviously, but there's a beginning, a middle and an end. And at the end, somehow you get away, if you get away, or you maybe help someone else, or you witness other people helping other people, but there is an end to it. If you just watch it and watch the coverage of it, you're constantly seeing the worst bit again and again and again. And so she has been able to show the impact that that can have on people. And so I think we do need to be careful about how we consume our news, because it can be really overwhelming. And I'm not saying, which some people are doing, you know, some people are turning away from news completely. A Reuters Institute study last year found that 40% of people were saying that they sometimes or often deliberately just avoided the news because it was just, you know, it is just too grim and overwhelmed them too much. I'm not suggesting we do that, but I think we need to think about how we consume it, you know, choose somewhere that is trustworthy to get it from, but also choose the times of day to do it. And do you need to have alerts on your phone all day telling you a moment when some breaking news happens? You know, if you're working as a journalist or a politician, you know, you two need to keep up with what's happening in the news all the time. But a lot of people don't. A lot of us don't. And it's fine if we wait a few hours to find that out so that we're not constantly getting told, oh, here's some more bad news and here's some more bad news.
It's also about being able to see the bad news, isn't it? The visual image is incredibly striking. And that does stay with you, doesn't it?
It does. It's hard to see things. Yeah, it's very hard to unsee things. You can't erase that. And interestingly, Roxanne Cohen-Silver, who did this research, she now always listens to news on radio or audio. You know, she doesn't watch the videos of it. And of course, sometimes those will just come up on your social media feeds. But the more you watch them, the more they'll come up. And, you know, if you watch other things, what I now get is a lot of gardening videos, which are great.
Excellent. One of our massive bugbears, and we talk about this on the podcast quite a lot, is toxic positivity. Everything is a positive. Turn a negative into a positive. I'm sorry, I don't know why I've affected an American accent there, but tell us your thoughts about toxic positivity.
Yeah, so toxic positivity can be something other people aim at us, where they say, oh, it's going to be fine all the time. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people can be in really serious situations, like, you know, they've got cancer and their friends want it to be okay. So they say, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine, and I'm sure when you get these tests, it'll be better. And that's not always what you want to hear, because you're actually feeling really scared. And what might be nice is somebody saying, yeah, this must be really scary, and, you know, this must be really difficult. And we can also aim toxic positivity at ourselves, which is, you know, feeling guilty about not feeling okay and sort of thinking, oh, well, I've got it. You know, how can I complain about anything? There are people in the world in the middle of war zones where it's much worse for them. And then making yourself even feel bad about feeling bad. There is a scale called the emotional invalidation scale, where you can measure how much you find that happens. So it's got statements like, you know, when I share how I'm feeling, others want me to get over it or accept it and move on. And some people feel that very strongly and find that they may have many people in their lives who try to invalidate their emotions. And so there, I think it's a question of being really careful not to do that to other people. You know, we want to cheer people up, but you have to be careful how you do it.
You also talk about imposter syndrome. David Bowie had it, Michelle Obama has it, Maya Angelou too. I mean, these are all people who you just assume have born confidence within them.
Yeah, and they really haven't. You know, it really is the case that they all felt they didn't know what they were doing. And, you know, lots of us, you know, might feel we don't know what we're doing and be afraid to be found out. And of course, people always think that, oh, well, they're the fake imposters because they didn't get found out and they're brilliant. And I'm the real imposter and will get found out. But it's actually very, very common. And, you know, a lot of people are busking it. And one of the solutions researchers found there is to tell other people about your concerns about the fact that you may not know what you're doing in your job, say, but not necessarily say your exact colleagues doing the same job, and not necessarily say if you're a students on the same course. Researchers found that actually, if you tell other people who do something slightly different what you're feeling, that can make a real difference to people. But there've even been studies showing that just knowing that other people often feel this too can make people feel a little bit better.
Fantastic question from one of our listeners. What time of day is best for the body and mind to consume the news?
Oh, that's such a good question. And it will vary for different people. So some people just feel they can't start the day without, you know, a good breakfast show with news and feel they need that at the start of the day. Others will find that it's just too depressing a start to the day and actually makes them feel down at the beginning of the day and would rather wait till the end. So I think it is a question of waiting of looking to find out. And maybe you don't want to listen to the news immediately before you go to sleep if that's what you're going to think about. And maybe you'd like to listen to something nicer as you go to sleep if you're say listening to the radio as you go to sleep.
I don't know where that, I mean, I listen first thing in the morning, last thing at night and all day.
Yeah, but it's kind of your job too,
no,
isn't
but
it?
And I'm one of the calmer people in my own orbit. Well, you and I are both quite calm, aren't we?
But do you think there's something in the fact that we have a reason to do it? Because I sometimes think we're given an easier ride because we're in a position to challenge things and people who are annoying us.
Yeah.
Whereas actually that feeling of impotence, if you are just having all of this stuff coming at you, I think would be very difficult.
Yeah, you're in the less helpless position, if you like, yeah, because you get to challenge people on these things and to try to make sense of it and to be actively there making sense of it. And also, whenever you've got a reason to do something professionally, it makes it a bit easier than just dealing with that by yourself.
This is a good point from Chris, who says, I'm terminally ill and even close friends forget to choose their words carefully. Please let people know that "Are you well?" is really upsetting because I'm not. Please tell people to say, how are you doing or what are you up to? That is much more positive.
Yeah, and it can be really hard for people to answer those questions again and again. And sometimes people will say, in a well-meaning way, they might say to somebody who is very ill, and I'm sorry to hear that, and they may say to somebody who's ill, but you look really good. You look really well today,
yes,
which really doesn't help either. No. And I think people think, oh, that's kind because I'm saying they look okay today and that's nice. But actually, that can go down badly.
There's some interesting bits in the book about worry. And you actually say that one thing you could do is set aside time in your day to worry. Now, how does that work?
Yeah, this has been, again, I base everything on the best evidence, and a Dutch psychologist called Ad Kerkhoff did this research. So you set aside 10 minutes a day where you're going to worry, and you sit at the kitchen table, say, and you worry. And you can, you know, you could have a piece of paper and write down all the things you're worrying about. And that doesn't sound much fun, that 10 minutes, and that isn't. But the whole purpose is that then in the rest of the day, when you find yourself worrying about this thing that's nagging at you, but that you maybe can't do anything about at the moment, then you think, no, I'm not going to worry about that now because I'm saving that for my worry time later on. And it has been shown to be really effective, even with people with very, very serious, very negative ruminations, as well as people at the more everyday end of worry, if you like.
You've done a lot of work on kindness, Claudia, and I wonder whether you think that kindness will come back into fashion. It's not in fashion at the moment. And if you look at the strong men around the world, they are not signed up members of the Be Kind Brigade, are they?
No, I think kindness is not in fashion at the moment in the wider world, and in a way in the world we see on the news. But there is still loads of individual kindness going on. And if you deliberately try and look out for that, you know, I recommend people become a kindness twitcher, if you like, because in some research at Sussex University that I was part of, we found that those people who were able to spot kindness around them had higher levels of well-being. And you can just watch for it. You know, now, once you start watching, you can't stop. I kept a kindness diary for a while of things I saw, which was things like people helping people with buggies up the steps of the tube, and people helping people, handing things back to people in the street that they'd dropped. And actually, once you start to look out for it, there is loads. And I think that can counter some of the unkindness we see, because it is still the case that despite some of the people in charge of countries in the world, that most people are trying their best most of the time.
Claudia, it's a fantastic book. Thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to us about it. It is simply called Overwhelmed, and it is by Claudia Hammond, full of useful advice.
Yeah, you will feel calmer if you imbibe even a part of it, I can assure you. Claudia, thank you very much. This is Jane and Fee on Times Radio with Wix. Book your free design appointment at wix.co.uk.
Times Radio Breakfast with Nationwide. Start your day with Times Radio's essential morning briefing. With intelligent conversation and incisive analysis from some of the most respected names in politics, culture and entertainment. Hear well-informed opinion and quality journalism on all the big stories making the headlines. Times Radio Breakfast, tomorrow morning from 6, with Nationwide, a good way to bank.
Download the free Times Radio app and listen to us wherever you are.
It turns out you can please all of the people, all of the time. Garden games for the kids, a separate cottage for the grandparents, a private chef for that special occasion. Simpson Travel, idyllic Mediterranean holidays that everyone will love. We take care of the details so you can enjoy the moment. SimpsonTravel.com, because your time is precious.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on, keep playing, keep winning, keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly, over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
On day 3 of leftovers for lunch, have a day off. Switch it up with a double cheeseburger for $2.49 on the McDonald's Saver menu.
Leftovers left the chat.
Talk about saver satisfaction. Served from 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary. Fees apply to delivery orders. Subject to availability.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Now, Fee did say earlier that we would read out some of the messages about the interview with Matt and Katie Single. I don't think we will.
Some of them we just can't.
We simply can't. I'll read out the one that criticises me. Your gotchas are very juvenile. Stop it, says Amanda. All right, well, fair enough. I mean, I think I sort of semi-agree with Amanda. I was kind of reduced to the level of the interviewees in some ways. But anyway, they are the people behind this extraordinary institution called Hope Sussex. If you're intrigued, there is more on thetimes.com. Have a look.
Emma says, please make it stop. Where are Henry IV's hums when you need them?
There we are. Right on cue. That was used, of course. It was invented by French historians and scientists using the mummified head of the French monarch, Henry IV. It was in the news yesterday. We've moved on. We're talking now about Trump land and so much more. Now, tomorrow's guest, we're very much looking forward to having David Baddiel with us. After 3:30, you may well have invested, as we both have, in episode 1 of his seminal series, Catman. It's on Channel 4. What's it about, Fee?
Cats.
It's about cats. And, we don't quite know how he's going to fill the other two episodes, but we can always ask him tomorrow.
He makes a very good point at the beginning that there are so many programmes about dogs. You've got dogs behaving badly, dogs behaving well. You've got the doghouse. You've got live coverage of Crufts. Where are the cats in our world?
Where indeed? Well, he sets out to find some astonishing cats. And as you know, we are a cat-positive show. And thank you, and podcast. So it will be a delight to talk to David Baddiel.
Do you think that we'll manage to do the whole 20 minutes just on cats?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's a challenge.
I'm going to be very strict with myself. It's cat.
You've laid down the gauntlet for yourself there. I'm just going to sit back in wonder. Actually, as a cat tends to do, I'm just going to watch you work.
Well, you'll just sidle off and use the litter tray in the corner, probably. Right, John Pienaar is next. Our thanks to Felix Forbes and our technical operator, the indefatigable Ryan Boyden. Have a very good evening. It'll be a busy one. John is here. Take care.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you, Fee. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar. This is Times Radio Drive, and here are the headlines. Emmanuel Macron has spoken in Davos, suggesting the world is drifting towards a new age ungoverned by rules where international law is trampled underfoot. And the British government has approved a new Chinese super embassy in London after months of delays. And coming up, the renowned historian and journalist Anne Applebaum joins me to give her verdicts on Donald Trump's recent moves and what she sees maybe coming down the track. And Sir Nigel Sheinwald, the former UK ambassador to Washington, is going to be joining me to give us his thoughts on how we should be dealing with the man in the White House. Now, we will take the temperature in Westminster, where the new Chinese super embassy has been given approval by ministers.
This is Times Radio.
Now the news with Stuart Woody.
John, thank you. Good afternoon. European Union leaders are insisting they'll hold their ground on Greenland, despite Donald Trump saying there's no going back. They've been reacting to the US president's renewed threats, with the Danish prime minister calling it a dark chapter. Speaking in Davos, French President Emmanuel Macron says he prefers respect over bullies.
As will a shift towards a world without rules, where international law is trampled underfoot, and where the only law that seems to matter is that of the strongest, and imperial ambitions are resurfacing. France and Europe must defend an effective multilateralism because it serves our interests and those of all who refuse to submit to the rule of force.
Meanwhile, Mauritius has insisted its sovereignty over the Chagos Islands has been unequivocally recognised by international law. The country's attorney general says they expect the deal to be implemented as soon as possible. Earlier, Donald Trump called it an act of great stupidity and one reason he wants to take control of Greenland. Prosecutors say no further charges will be brought against Lucy Letby, the nurse convicted of killing seven babies. The Crown Prosecution Service says evidence of further murder and attempted murder allegations involving children at hospitals in Chester and Liverpool didn't meet the evidential threshold. Cheshire Constabulary has expressed frustration at the decision. Controversial plans for a Chinese mega embassy in London have been approved despite warnings from the security services. Ministers said planning permission should be granted for the site near the Tower of London. It's emerged that MI5 and GCHQ warned it would be unrealistic to eliminate all risks linked to the new embassy. Former Conservative leader Sir Ian Duncan Smith told Times Radio it's mad to approve the plans.
It's been complained about by the Americans, by the Dutch, by the Swiss, by others from the Five Eyes arrangement because of its location. Its location sits right alongside very critical communications. It was very clear the security services are very concerned about the nature of the activities of China, and this will make the activities much easier. I mean, we forget that this is a country that poses a phenomenal threat.
A ban on social media for under-16s, phone curfews and restricting algorithmic features like the infinite scroll are among measures the government is consulting on. Technology Secretary Liz Kendall told MPs the government will act robustly after the three-month consultation to make sure young people get the childhood they deserve.
I know that many parents are deeply worried about a whole range of other impacts on their children. The consequences for their mental health, their concentration and sleep, their sense of self-esteem, their ability to learn and to explore the online world without fear. We are determined to help parents, children and young people deal with these issues with a lasting solution.
And Elon Musk has suggested he could buy Ryanair. It's part of a growing row involving the owner of Starlink and the airline's chief executive, Michael O'Leary. O'Leary said he wouldn't follow BA and Lufthansa in installing satellite internet equipment on aircraft. For a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times Radio News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. John Pienaar at Drive on Times Radio.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. They used to call him a hand grenade with a bad haircut. No, it wasn't Donald Trump. It was actually another headline-grabbing populist billionaire presidential candidate back in the 90s. But it is, well, not a bad description of a president who's threatening to blow up the Atlantic Alliance for the sake of trying to own Greenland, and who today has randomly greeted Keir Starmer's efforts to calm down the crisis and stay on Trump's good side by mocking what he described as Starmer and the British government's total weakness and great stupidity. Now, President Trump was referring earlier to the UK decision to return to Mauritius the island of Diego Garcia with its US airbase and then lease it back. Not that it matters. The deal's been done. And by the way, the Trump administration endorsed the deal last year. Maybe he's forgotten. It is really all about Greenland and Donald Trump's relentless campaign of pressure, blackmail, as some European leaders put it, to get hold of Greenland, whether its people or legal owner Denmark like it or not, which they don't. Now, what matters, and what I'm going to be discussing live in a moment with Britain's former ambassador to the United States, Sir Nigel Sheinwald, and the leading commentator, Anne Applebaum, is that the president seems to care nothing for embarrassing and humiliating even a supporter like Keir Starmer, even as Starmer is trying desperately to avoid the strain between America and its partners in NATO becoming a catastrophic divorce, or even worse. We're going to be looking at what could become a huge and painful dilemma for Starmer, for Britain and for the NATO partners if Donald Trump refuses to back down, if he goes ahead and punishes America's partners and former friends, including us in the UK, with trade tariffs for opposing his Greenland takeover plan. Will Keir Starmer have no choice but to hit back, to side with European leaders in a ruinous trade war with America, and on the way wave goodbye to the Atlantic Alliance that has been driven to the brink of destruction by the President of the United States? Oh dear, I wonder what you think. Send me a text, 87222, start with the word Times, or tweet to @TimesRadio. So, as promised, I'm going to welcome to the programme straight away Anne Applebaum, who is the Pulitzer Prize-winning American journalist and historian. Anne, welcome to the programme.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Now, can I just start by getting your own judgment on what is a big question? Now, apart from being very rude and clearly as willing to insult America's friends as its adversaries, and maybe more willing, President Trump's supporters, Anne, insist that he's playing a game of global chess the whole time. Do you think President Trump has a strategy and tactics to get hold of Greenland, or are the threats and the insults driven by impulse and emotion, by a love of power and a yearning for more?
Since he became president the first time, and even more since he became president the second time, pundits, commentators, world leaders, armchair philosophers have tried to name what is Trump's foreign policy, what is his strategy. They use isolationism, neo-imperialism, all kinds of other isms. I think it's an enormous waste of time. Trump is not interested in strategy. He doesn't think long term. He doesn't think globally. He doesn't think about how what he does in one sphere affects people in another sphere.
Yeah.
There is no pattern to what he does. What he has are his obsessions. He was obsessed with tariffs, actually, for most of his life. He's obsessed with the idea that European allies are a waste. He's been saying that since the 1980s. U.S. doesn't need European allies, shouldn't have them. And he's obsessed with Greenland. That's more recent. There are different theories about who put it into his head. But the events, I think, particularly the last few days when he wrote a letter to the Prime Minister of Norway saying that because Norway, which is, of course, is not in Norway's gift, but Norway hadn't given him the Nobel Peace Prize, that gives him the legitimacy to attack Greenland. I mean, I think we're now into a different sphere. We're beyond strategy, where we now have to talk about one man's obsession and maybe madness.
Maybe madness.